Hi, this is the Guru speaking. I'm here to tell you guys today that we're supposed to do a podcast on Q&A. Well, that's not going to happen. Steve got carried away on a figure eight rant, and well, hope you enjoy.
There was a boat that launched on the lake, a fine crest liner, no mistake. The wind picked up, Minn Kota went down, throw me, musky boys, throw.
Soon may the Bennington come to bring us Pepsi and pork and gum. One day when the measuring's done, we'll take our picks and go.
They had not been 2 hours on the bay when her hummingbird, she chirped away. The guide clipped on a Jake to say on the gram that fish he'd show.
Soon may the Bennington come to bring us Pepsi and pork and gum. One day.
All right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 podcast. Ahoy, Guru. Ahoy.
Ahoy, matey.
Arr. Man, there is nothing to start off a podcast like a sea shanty, Tyler.
I don't even know what that is,
well,
but it's fun.
What you just heard, that's what it is. Do you know what the scary thing is? The guy that sent that to me, do you know who it is, Tyler? Huh? Any guesses?
I do not.
It is Paul that made Musky Country.
The video game guy?
The video game Musky Country.
Oh, my gosh.
If you ain't playing Musky Country, you ain't living. Get it. It's a free version here on the app. Have fun with it over in the My 360 section. Paul has a thing with sea shanties. Okay, so he's into that. He's also into juggling, and he's also into video games, and he's also into musky fishing. So he sent me a sea shanty. So we open with the sea shanty, folks. What, it's hip right now.
He's a man of variety.
He is a renaissance man. I bet he's been to a renaissance fair. I'd bet my life on it. Anyway, you know, it is what it is. I love it. I love the weirder, the better, the stranger. And speaking of strange, Tyler, you've been fishing for some strange fish because you can't fish muskies right now.
No,
you're
unfortunately.
Iced up. So you've been.
I'm killing time by fishing for burbots. Poot? It's all about all you can do.
Poot.
Burbots.
Is it the same as a ill poot?
Ill poot.
Ill poot. Ill poot.
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 A little poot in the toot.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm jealous, though. You get to go musky fishing.
I've been on it. Just quick question on the poot.
Poot.
Are you keeping them for bait? Or like you have these things, like are you keeping them in a bathtub in your house or something like that for musky bait later?
No. Like I'm not sure if we can do that.
Your mom comes in and there's just a bathtub full of eel poot. Yeah, man. Dude, I've been on a bite. It is cold. It has been like stupid. Talking to like Jay at the muskie shop or the guys at the muskie shop, they're like, "Oh, it's like 30 out today." I'm like, "It's the same temperature here. It's miserable." You know, it's been the year of frozen rods and lines. But been on them, man. I'll tell you, cold water. Anybody that's down here in the south, you know what I'm talking about. It is a cold water year, and it is all about being patient. It's like that three P's, you know what I'm saying? It's like patterning, patience, and persistence. That sounds corny, like I'm your life coach or something, but you know, whatever. But that's what it's taking right now, is because, you know, Tyler, like the time when you guys are fishing upper 30, lower 40 water, it's cold outside. You know, it's not the funnest time to fish. But if you're willing to do it, it's paying off big. And it's been paying off big on my boat for real, like big fish, big fatties.
You got your thermals on there, Steve?
But,
all your layers?
Oh, my God. I'll tell you. Since there's no one listening, Tyler, right?
This is just you and me.
Just me and you talking. I don't think anybody listens to this. I've been taking my thermal long johns and just like cutting the crotch out with a pair of scissors. You know, it's just like I'm sick of digging through like coveralls and everything for like months. I said, this is impossible. You know,
it's just like it's that panic attack. You're like, I gotta pee.
Like, yeah.
Find it.
And so that's my least favorite thing about winter fishing. It's just like, gonna take off my gloves. Now I'm gonna take, you know, it's like a 5 hour. And my, you know, it's like, you're out there, you're casting. It's like you got four pairs of thermal pants on, and I'm always wearing like fleece jeans, and those are falling down. It's just such a pain. Everything is a, like, and the other thing is this. I can't find anything, Tyler. Nothing. I put my, I have, let me think real quick. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So on my outer layer, there are 12 pockets, right? So you got like chest, mid, hip pockets, pants pockets, like leg cargo pockets, like on all these rain suits and stuff. So it's just like all day long, I feel like I'm digging through pockets, you know? It's so annoying. And I always forget where I put it. So my phone will end up like just arbitrary places, and I'm just out there looking for my phone or like a spare glove. I'm just, please, t-shirts and shorts soon. I need it. Anyway, we've been bad boys, Tyler. Bad boys. Very bad.
Bad boys for life.
Bad, very bad. Yes. We've been bad about getting to use your Q&A. So here we are. Rock you like a hurricane. We're going to jump right into the user Q&A. Oh, before that, I do guys, well, little, I will, little tidbit, little morsel, Tyler, if you will.
All right.
Moisten your lips for a little morsel. Got some big news over here at the Muskie 360 podcast. Going to have some way cool, way fun giveaways coming up. Obviously, we're always going to have your junior inlines hook up, but we got some cool baits coming. So listen, the next couple episodes, Tyler. But it's gonna be awesome.
So, it's happening.
It's happening, folks. We're gonna be giving away some like bad to the bone stuff. Anyway, Jake says, hi. I'm fishing out of a smaller boat without a lot of room for storage. I'm just wondering how you guys store all your stuff. I know there's some fancy boxes out there, but most of them are expensive and way too big. Tyler, me and you have 17-foot deep V boats. Nothing monstrous. It just is what it is. I'm not like, hey, I'm going to got my 29 footer. You know, we fish out of what I would call normal human being boats that do not. So,
yeah, we're normal.
Normal. I drive by someone. They go, that's a boat. They don't go, wow, look at that boat. They go, yeah, that's a boat. Why does that guy look that way? I'm not the guy that's going to have a boat that costs more than my house. So, you know, me and you have pretty similar boats, side consoles. Probably Jake saying he's out of a smaller boat, you know, if you're in a John, anything like that. So me and you've talked about this tackle storage before, but my big thing is when you're trying to store these freaking baits, I don't think there's a good way, Tyler. I just don't.
No one's come up with the perfect way to store musky baits.
What I do... And Tyler, you've seen it. I have a rail system on my boat, and I've actually put rails up and just hang tons of baits around the boat. It's probably not the safest thing, but
it looks like a bait shop.
It does. So they're hanging off the edges. One thing, let me pull this up real quick.
I do.
Huh?
When I was young, go ahead.
I was going to say, as I know where you're going with this, and it's with the milk crates, right? Which are.
I was just about to say that. Yeah.
Right. But I was looking at the musketshop.com. Musketshop. Shameless. We're just absolutely shameless.
We have no shame here.
This product plug is brought to you by the Muskie Shop. I'm pulling it up while we're reading that question. They've got a pre-made milk crate system for $34. Right? So here's the tease. Tackle, crate it, racks, right? And so you can convert a 5-gallon bucket or a milk crate into tackle storage. So you have nice dividers. Tyler and I have stolen downspout off of people's houses to make tackle boxes before.
Downspout works really well.
Right. And, but, you know, the downspout, I mean, it doesn't hold up. It's downspout, you know what I'm saying?
I've sat on them and they break.
Yeah, so you know, that's not that's the pretty hill by the way of doing it. But there's like the tease, that little crate it thing where you can, like I said, you can put in the bucket or put in a milk crate. And also too, I like the 5-gallon bucket deal from they got a Dubro bucket holder, lure holder that clips into a 5-gallon bucket for like under your seat. Now, the trick with that is Tyron, we've done this on my boat, and you've seen it, where we take a bucket, put those Duro Bros in it, and then put it under the pedestal.
Yeah, it fits just perfectly right under the pedestal.
You got to cut a hole in the bottom of your bucket. Oh, yeah, what are you turning the yard doing? I'm just out here cutting a hole with my musky bucket. You know, that is the poor man's pedestal, pal.
It works.
And it'll hold a lot of baits. And that little clip around thing they have on there keeps the baits from getting all gummed up, you know. Again, if that's not in the cards, you know, you can go as hillbilly as you want. Like we said, the buckets and downspout and all that stuff. That's the best way I've found if we're like minimalistic, not a lot of boat storage. Tyler, the easiest way though is this. Just throw it on the floor. You just step in the boat. Everything's just laying in the bottom of the boat. Like, where's your tackle box? It's the floor. I just drive around.
The whole floor is just musky baits.
You're just stepping in. And we call this the SS Tetanus. No sandals, please. No sandals.
What color carpet do you have? I can't remember.
Just take your baits. And just throw them in the bottom of the boat. And you just sort of dig around. I feel like throwing this. You can't get it out, so you just throw a different bait. Some days, that's what my boat looks like. There's days where just bait knots.
Reach down to grab a bait, and you're like, I don't feel like throwing that one now.
No, I've done it. Tangled. Dude, I'm sitting there shaking them apart, screaming, come out of there. I do that anymore, too. I'll just grab a bait and shake the living crap out of it until it comes out. I'm like, if it breaks, it breaks. Yeah,
what is that? We would rather shake it than just methodically, like, pull it apart.
I don't know. Because I'm impatient, and it costs me literally a quarter of a cast, right? It's just like, I mean, that's the one thing. God, I'm just getting off on a tangent here. I just hate, like, I love musky baits more than anything on planet Earth. Obsessive about them. I hate storing them. It's just a mess. It's like, dude, remember that time we were out and all your bucktails got gummed up? And it was just like...
Yeah, that was pretty terrible.
It was like, we're just going to throw that one that's not connected. You know, they're all swinging around there and just like wadded up. And you go, I hope they're on purple today because that's the one that's not stuck in there. Anyway, Dave says, got my big Norm. Got it from the musky shop. Got my big Norm. What tips do you and Steve, the guru, anybody have for a big Norm owner? Fast, slow? What's the game plan? I don't know why I read it like that, Tyler. I'm high on life. Big Norm. That's the bait, baby. Fast, slow? That's really not the question. What you're going to want to do with that bait is sort of think about where you're fishing. So let's say we're fishing a shelf and it, you know, you're throwing the edges and it's shallow water and then it breaks off into 10, 12 feet. You can work it over those shallows. And then when you know where that break line is, start working it more aggressively with a lower rod tip and get it to go down. So you can contour. You're following contours, following break lines is the typical thing. Now, if it's a timber situation, that bait's going to go through timber. Like a hot knife. It's just going to slide through timber pretty easily without getting fouled up too often. And so if you're working timber, it's about reeling into it. You feel the timber and then you let it come up a little bit and you go back into it. And it's just like you're bumping and, you know, just bump and grind through the timber and really trigger strikes that way. Depends on where you're fishing and what time of year you're fishing. The other thing me and Tyler have done up north is fishing rocks and reefs. And in those,
ticking and clicking, son.
Yep, ticking and clicking. So that's the scenario. Fast or slow doesn't matter. Also, too, you can rip it. And that's probably one of my favorite ways of working that thing is rip it and let it come up a little bit. Rip, pick up the slack. Rip, pick up the slack. That bait's coming down really hard. And when you're reeling up the slack, it's floating up pretty quick. Tail's undulating. It's shaking back and forth. That's sort of my big Norm game plan.
Big Norm.
Anyway.
It's universal. You can use it
anywhere in the universe.
Yeah. Mars.
Mars. Anywhere. If you can get to Mars, you can work a big Norm. Trevor says, really enjoy the podcast. Wondering if you've ever taken a glider like a Phantom or a Hellhound and made it more buoyant. When fishing Pennsylvania rivers, I really like using those two gliders, but I find when it comes to January and February that they're far too fast sinking. Or should I just switch to a whole different glider? Thanks, guys. Drink a Pepsi for me. Well, I'm cracking him right. I actually cracked him a minute ago, but we'll work on that. Tyler, do you mod the gliders, or what do we do, man? What do you think?
To make them lighter so they float more, or what? That's what they want.
Well, the problem with that...
You could do smaller hooks.
Well, yeah, slow your sink rate. What I think about when it comes to that situation, a lot of options. If it's like a fast sink rate, what I've done in that scenario is I will look at Suic, right? And like a 9-inch weighted Suic can really suspend or hang in there and have a, if you get it weighted right and you play with it, you can get a neutrally buoyant kind of zigzag kind of thing going on there. This is when I start thinking, though, let me see what options are there. When we start looking at those glides, right, is, there it is. I couldn't remember if it was what the model was. That's when I'm going to look at that River Run Shallow Manta. Okay? So you got Mantas, you got Hang Tens, and you got River Run Shallow. Okay? It is meant for fishing over shallow water. It's going to hang more by far with a far slower fall. Again, Tyler, I think it was last week or one of the podcasts, we were talking about running shallow bulldogs, right? In the winter.
Yep.
It's not because the fish are necessarily shallow. It's a more controlled sink rate. So the River Run Shallow jerk bait from Manta. I like those things. They're a quick bait. You got to really pay a lot of attention to those, you know, how they're easy to run, but it's a little bit of a different feel. That's what I would be looking at. If you're worried about too quick of a sink rate, go with the River Run Shallow Manta. Also, too, I'm a big fan of the Shum Shums. Shum. I don't know. Tyler, I'm just a complete dipshit today. Sorry. Anyway, let me look here. Shum Shums. I like the Shums. If you don't like Shums, then you don't know about them. Really good little bait. A lot of hang time. I do not know on the Chaos versions what the hang time's like. I'm more of I got some old school ones. They hang pretty well, but I know the Mini Tap Dancer, I love that bait, hangs really well as well. So if you're looking for a small glider that's got hang time, the Mini Tap Dancer, you know, easy baits to work. Is that Rapala Subwalk. And that's a bait that never gets talked about. It's like one of these baits. Like, is it a musky bait?
Never even heard of it.
Well, it's got feathers on the tail, first and foremost. I cut those off. I have some of them. They got a really good hang time. Really like a... Let me pull it up real quick so I don't talk out of turn. Says that, you know, working in the 0-4. So it's a slow sinking. And that is a good little bait for that, depending on your size. It's 6 inches. I like taking the feathers off. I don't like bait. Tyler, do you like baits with feathers on the hooks? I don't.
You mean like bucktails with feathers?
No,
or like hard baits with feathers?
Hard baits. And they're like, oh, why do you, like, hey, here's
it. It just feels like, I don't know, too foo-foo.
Yeah, yeah,
I feel like, you know. It's like a dude with feathers in his hair. I don't know.
We call them hippies, and we don't let them. Yeah. Ain't no hippies in musket country. Get out of here, hippie.
Hippie free zone.
Hippies.
I look at it and go, it's kind of hippie-ish. I don't really like that.
Yeah. You know, listen. Every major bait manufacturer listens to this podcast to know what to make, Tyler. You know that, right? Everyone, they're just dying to hear our opinion on what they should make. Stop ruining good baits with feathers on the hooks, okay? Can we just don't. They come off, though. Get you a pocket knife. I like that Subwalk. That's a cool little deal there. The Weston Swim Glide Bait is also a hard plastic little dude. And I'm just trying to think because I love situations like this. The other thing that's going to be overlooked, it sort of goes to like what I'd said about the Suic thing, are the sand cats.
Oh, yes. Those are great.
But I don't know. I don't know if I would call a sand cat a dive and rise. I don't know if I'd call it. I don't know what it is other than good. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't know what category to put it in. Otherwise, it's kind of its own thing.
It is. It falls into that. You know, there's this black hole of baits called jerk baits.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Well,
they do different things.
I've been jerking on it, and this is what happened. You know, it's a jerk bait. Call it a jerk bait. Definitely. Sandcat is a jerk bait, but dive and rise from side to side. Heck, you reel it straight. It shudders like a crankbait. So those are
It has a great shutter. It's just it drives me nuts. I love it.
Drives me nuts, he says. Those are some options. First and foremost, if you're fishing there in Pennsylvania, River Run Manta, shallow, give her a go. Let us know how it turns out. Next caller. What we got? Okay. Bruce. Hey guys, I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about figure eights. I learned a figure eight with a local guide, and he taught me to do a big oval instead of an eight so the bigger girls can make the turn. I've had a lot of follows but few takes, and it looks like a lot of muskies online eat on the outside turn of a true eight after speeding the bait up a little bit. Is the eight better than a circle? Mm. You're gonna get two answers because I'm an oval guy. Ovaltine.
Come on.
Oh, Ovaltine.
Get your Ovaltine.
Ovaltine. God, man. Here's my thing. I like ovals. I feel like it gives a better chance to the fish. And my rule of thumb is this, is one oval. And I'm reading the follow. Now, this is the big thing here, and this is how we get out of a solid answer, Tyler, right? Mm-hmm. You go, well, you got to read the follow. You know? So that's how you...
Done. Next question.
Done. Yeah, you got to read the follow. But if I see a fish coming in and it is hot, I'm talking hot, 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 one oval, and then I'm going to go into an eight after I do a complete revolution. I will mix it up. So oval, eight, right? Eight, mm-hmm. oval.
Oh. Well, you're trying to trigger a strike.
Right.
If you're monotonous, the less chance that fish is going to eat, unless it's like a kamikaze muskie. Right. But, you know.
And they're just, bah! You can't help but catch those fish. We all pray that we have those fish that are just ready to go. I like ovals because, again, I guide. Everybody knows that. And I've seen a lot of big fish get screwed up on eights that are too tight.
It's just an oval is so much easier to control.
It's controllable. I tell my clients to do ovals. And the same reason that guy, whoever he went with is the same reasoning. Is I've seen it time and time again. Somebody comes in, and I'm not talking the first hour and a half when everybody's ready, right? People show up and they're like, I'm ready to fish and I'm going to do everything right for the first hour and a half. You know, and then the wheels start coming off the wagon. Things start getting a little bit rickety there. You know, they're getting a little lazy in the figure eight. Tyler, you know how it is.
Then the figure eight just is a solid line back and forth.
Right. It becomes this.
There's no oval. There's no circle. There's nothing. Nah.
Yeah. It's just a sweep across. It's just like little twist and. You know, I've seen people make bigger moves, stern a cup of coffee. You know, they're doing these tight little, it becomes, again, I catch myself doing it. I've seen a lot of people do lazy J's, and I've seen a lot of people do arbitrary, crappy figure eights. And I'm usually standing there going, fish, fish, there's a fish, fish.
Yes.
Right?
It gets lazy, and you're just like, dude. That wasn't the figure eight. That was just a straight jab.
Yeah, that was it. You just, are we musky fishing or not? And I'll tell you, here's my deal. The difference between good musky fishermen and everybody else is their willingness to do all the right things all the time. Period. So if you want to catch a lot of muskies, you better do a good 8 or oval. If you can do a good 8 and you do it the right way and it's not too tight, so it's actually coming and it's sweeping by your feet, the rod is down, right? We're not looking at the bait. And I'm going to get off a tangent here, because here's the deal. Had this happen this week, I'm yelling, stop trying to watch the fish eat. Here's this fish. It comes in. It is incensed. It is losing its mind, right? It's also 6 feet down. You can see it plain as day, like a rocket ship. And I see the guy, and he's got his shoulders up. You know, elbows are up, the rod's up. Like, why are you pulling the bait up and your arms are pulled up, right? Body language. Yeah. Like the fish is down there. Keep the bait down.
Yeah, that's one thing about the figure eight, especially with new anglers, is you don't think about your body language. Like, when a fish comes in, you ever watch those guys and they're super stiff, like rigor mortis, and they're stressed out, they're sweating, and they're figure eighting, but the figure eight's like a box because it's just not relaxed. And you're like, dude, just relax. Mm-hmm. It's a stupid fish. Yeah. Don't freak out about it. If you're relaxed, you have a better chance of catching that fish.
I'll tell you.
If you're stiff and rigid, you can't catch them.
You just hit on a thing that I talk about a lot on the boat. I don't think I've pounded on the podcast. Is, like you said, the body language thing. Big hang up for me. So let's just go over figure eighting here. Whatever. Eights versus ovals, I don't care. Whatever you're comfortable with. I think if you do good figure eights, you're going to catch fish. And if you do good ovals, you're going to catch fish. And I think the smart move is to mix it up. Agreed? Good enough.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So let's talk. Let's talk about good figure eights. Let's forget the question. Let's talk figure eights and how to do it and how to do it right. Number one, I've seen it. If you've listened to the podcast in the beginning, we used to holler and scream about 8'6" rods, right? And now we're hollering and screaming about 9'6" and 9-foot rods. Okay. First and foremost, if you are 5'6" or 5'8", a 9-foot rod's going to be your ticket. 5'10", whatever. If you're Tyler, we're both, what, 6'2", somewhere in that neighborhood?
6'2",
you know, maybe more, who knows? We haven't stood back to back yet, but we are trying out for the Harlem Globetrotters. You know, and if you're on the taller end of things, 9'6", right? So, comfortable rod for you. Here's the deal. That longer rod is going to allow you to do a better bad figure eight or oval. And when I say that, is that whole about I see the light go out of people's eyes after an hour and a half, right? They're excited, and now we're into musky fishing. You know what I'm saying, Tyler? It's just like the delusion.
All hope is lost.
Right. The delusions of grandeur are gone. You know, you've pulled into the parking lot, whether you're with a guide or not, you're excited, you're there, you're amped up, and you've been dreaming about this 50-inch muskie, and now nothing has happened, and it's an hour and a half or 2 hours in, and now you realize it is going to be muskie fishing. Oh, Joe, I'm not the lucky one that it just happens to in the first 30 minutes. Ding dong.
Yes.
No surprise.
Yes.
Right. Welcome to muskie fishing. Hello. So what happens is, and I do it too, and that's why I love the 9-6s, is because my bad figure eights are better than my good figure eights with shorter rods, period.
More room for error.
More room for error. So the more room for error I have, the better I am, because I'm sitting here eating a sandwich figure eight with one hand. My cell phone's ringing. My client's just got a bird's nest, and I'm looking over my shoulder and talking to him, right?
We've both, on those 9-6s, we've both caught fish texting. Mm-hmm. I've done it. You've done it. We're just like, oh, one hand.
Yeah, one-handed. You reel it up and you don't see him and you're going through the motion. So, longer rod. If you're taller, 9-6. If you're normal height or whatever, you know, 9-footer. If you're 3'2", 7-6 will work. Get a rod that's big for you. The most comfortable big rod you can throw. Tyler and I have both been down the 10-foot rabbit hole. I'm not, it's just not for me. right?
It's a little big.
Yeah, it's a little big. I snagged a guy in another county one time, you know? Well, my problem is this, and I'll tell you, getting on this whole tangent here, but we're just going to break down figure eights entirely. The deal for me with the 10-foot rods is this, and the question comes up all the time, what's the deal with the 10s, okay? At a certain point, for me, it becomes a matter of hitting bottom during figure eights if I'm fishing shallow zones. It becomes a matter of rod storage, right? And those are just things. And also the biggest thing for me is netting. I find it difficult.
Solo netting too, man.
Solo netting. And I'm choking up on the rod a lot of times in a solo netting situation, a 9-6. I don't like that extra little length. It's not my cup of tea. Maybe I'll be a convert eventually. But so good figure eights are going to start with the right rod. The right rod is going to be a 9 or a 9-6. Anything outside of that, meh. Okay. The other thing, another point of this is going to be this. You're not bending over. And people ask me all the time if they've never musky fished before, they're a novice angler, or they've only been doing it for a few years. Why are they not afraid of the boat? And I'm going to give you my thoughts. And I'm probably wrong, but this is what I think. Okay. And this is the body language thing. What can hurt a juvenile musky diver once it's up to 12 to that 15, 20, 25 inch range?
Birds.
So if your toes are not at the gunwale and you're not ready for a good figure eight every time, now we're making a physical movement forward that could cast a shadow or there's motion above their head. Right?
A jukey move. You can't be like jumpy. You can't be rigid. You got to be smooth
and be ready for it already. So here, and I've seen it, like the guys are standing away from the edge and here comes a fish and now we're making a juke forward and it's usually a clumsy move. Right. Mm-hmm. So a shadow moves. Something's weird. I don't know if, and again, it's conjecture. It's my best guess. I don't think any fish likes to see a shadow above their head because predatory birds abound. Right. So, you know, that's it. I mean, I watch it every day on the boat. Here comes a bird and he's flying out of there with a trout. So the right rod, 9 or 9-6. Body language. Be ready for a figure eight before it ever happens. What I do is I lead with my shoulder, okay? So I reel left-handed. My body is positioned where my left shoulder that I'm reeling with is on sort of closer to the edge. I know this sounds tiny, but it's like a good golf stance, right? I don't want to be flat and squared up against the thing. I want to lead into that really smooth. And so body language, toes against the gunwale of the boat, sort of leading with whatever shoulders your dominant side. And so you can come right across your body. The big thing I see is here, when the fish is coming in, I see people try to keep the bait too high, like I was just saying, right? Take him down, up, and around. That is how you catch muskies, is the rod goes down with the bait coming. So the fish actually moves down with the bait. His head is coming down. You take him across your feet, and now you're bringing him up. It's like a roller coaster bank. You know how a roller coaster banks, Tyler? It goes down.
Yeah.
You make this turn. The way you catch a muskie is get his head coming up vertically. That's why they eat. You see good anglers that get them in the corner, right?
Because they're coming up as they're turning.
Yes. And they're going, this thing's about to get away from me. I better grab it now while I can. That's it.
That's one of the most beautiful, like, parts of the technique right there. That's how you know it's perfect, if you're getting them like that.
Right in that corner. And so the fish is straight when we're coming. If you think about how this is reeling in, pretend you the bait's right in front of you. The fish is right in front of or right behind the bait. He's got visual lock on that bait. When we take him down, he's still got a visual lock. Visual lock straight across under your feet. He can still see it from that first turn, right? Because we're sort of coming in straight and starting into our eights or ovals when we first see him. When you get on that first turn and you're taking him up and over, that bait is actually changing its angle in the water, and it's changing what it looks like visually to him as well. So now that bait is going sideways away from him, and they're going to hammer. That's the way I conceptualize it and think about it, because the angle, the speed, everything, you know, you can stall in that corner too.
You can do anything.
You can do anything. once you've done it enough and you've caught enough figure eight fish, you realize you can play with them.
Yeah, you get out of that sense of like, I gotta catch them.
Right.
If I don't catch them, I suck or whatever. Mm-hmm. I have to do it this exact same boring way every time. I won't catch one. Once you get out of that complacency of like dullness, you can start doing whatever. You just go, I don't care if I catch it.
Right.
But I'm going to figure out the best way to do
it. But that's how you learn stuff and what they'll actually do and what they won't. Right. And so I'll do it where I know he's going to eat in that turn and I'll speed it up just so he won't and make him go around again. And, you know, sometimes reverse the entire process and start going the other way. You realize the parameters of what's acceptable. And what I mean by that is, you know, if I go too fast in these sections of the eight, because you have your corners, right, and your straightaways and your crossover in an eight. But in the different sections of that motion, you know what you have to do, right? Speed it up on your straightaway, slow it down in the corners is good as gold, right? That's pretty much the thing. But you realize, like, if you just, you can, like, really make them do weird stuff. You know, get them coming in and off, back and on, back and in and off. If you're just in speed on a hot fish,
it's like you can do like a combination in like a Nintendo game or whatever, on a video game. Yeah. The different combinations give you different stuff.
Right, exactly. And my thing is, some of the most fun I've had with fish that are if I got a 50 coming in, I'm not screwing around. I got a 42. Let's have fun, right? I like taking hot fish and taking them down deep and then just bringing that bait up straight up as I can. Yeah. And they can't stand it. They're like, you know, and just take it right below the surface. And once you get some fish under your belt, or maybe you already have a bunch of fish under your belt, but you're comfortable enough to toy with them, you realize that in that scenario, right then and there, you're in control. And that's probably the biggest thing, I think, in a figure eight, is to go, I'm in control. This is, like you said, Tyler, this is not a let's get sweaty, pee my pants, freaking out mode, right?
Getting rigid. No. You got to be relaxed.
Well, and I mean, I've been accused multiple times of being icy.
Yeah.
Right? I'm icy on the boat, where it's just like, okay.
You kind of have to be.
You have to be. But also, too, me and Tyler, we were together this past summer and I caught one of the biggest fish I've ever caught. And I was actually barking at you more about how we were going to net it, but then freaked out afterward.
That's how we came up with your alter ego, Net and Steve? Yeah.
Oh, no, it was Stone. What did you say? Stone Cold or something?
Stone Cold Steve Awesome? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because I'm sitting here, Tyler, you're freaking more than I am. But then after the fact, folks, we can't giggle at Tyler because I did throw up after. So if you want to know, that's how nervous I really was. But on the exterior, I was stone cold. That's a big thing, man. Oh, God, other figure eight stuff, Tyler, that I'm just preaching now.
One thing I got is that I'm always, when I'm in the middle of a cast, I'm planning out how I want to bring it in. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying, how you lead it.
Yeah.
I'm doing that, but in my mind, before I'm as I'm doing my presentation, I'm visualizing in my mind how I want to bring the bait in based off the angle of my cast.
Yes.
So what I mean by that is, so say I had to make a really weird cast. You may see me, if you're in the back of the boat, when it's midway through, you may see me change the tip of my rod, maybe from the left to the right side of my body, based on how I visualize the lure coming in.
That is a true point, you know, sort of bodes to the body language and anticipating.
Yes. If you can plan it out, you're better. You have a better chance at getting a fish to eat. If you don't have it planned out well and you're kind of just riding out of the seat of your pants, something's going to surprise you.
One thing that I can say is this is don't, and this just happens, is like if you're not fishing a lot or you don't have a good feel of what's going on, people getting surprised that the bait is there. Whoa! didn't know that was that close. Try to spend some time feeling out. You know, how if I make a bomb cast, I can start feeling the vibration changing. Right, you're in tune with your equipment. You go, that bait's getting near. right?
Yes.
The line is looking different, okay? No matter how far down your rod tip is, a lot of times you can look at that section of line that you can see subsurface if you're in those scenarios where it's not too stained. You can see the line angles changing because something's, it's getting closer. I can feel it. I can feel more vibration in the handle or in my wrist or in the rod tip, anything. You can have a better feel of what's going on there instead of, oh crap, the bait's here, I gotta figure it. That's a big rookie mistake.
That's how I actually like figure out how to work baits correctly. I don't go off by visualizing really much, just like visual. I go off by how it feels in my hands.
Right.
How I can feel the bait, how I can work the bait, what it's doing near the boat, away from the boat, what it feels like. If I can watch someone do something, I can replicate it, I'll have it permanently worked out in my brain if I can feel it right. The correct way.
Right. And so anticipating the bait's arrival. If it's a short cast, you should have a really good idea of how quick it'll be there. If it's a bomb cast, different cast lengths, being in tune with the bait when it's going to arrive at the side of the boat, anticipating again that the fish is going to be there. Booker has said it. I've heard a lot of guys say this. Every time you figure it, you should be thinking that a fish is going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, am I guilty of not doing that? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all of us are.
Oh, yeah. It's hour 7. And then you get surprised. And I've missed, I hate to say it, I have missed a lot of fish from not being fully engaged. Going through the motions, right? What we're talking about here is, though, and I've got a lot of them I shouldn't have caught because I was going through the motions well. Hence the longer rods, hence the good mechanics. Having good mechanics. I know, Tyler, and I think this is way better than finishing Q&A because this is important stuff. And
it's great.
I know we're on a big tangent here. I'm sorry. We'll get the other questions. But here's my thing. Anticipating that the fish is going to be there. So my body language, right, is there. Secondly, like you said, Tyler, where is that bait coming from? So I'm already set up for it. So body language is right. Rod angle's right. I'm anticipating the fish is there. I'm going to come through and it's going to be big and wide. Now, I don't care if it's a 35-incher or a 55-incher. They need turning radius. This is the one thing I hammer with my clients about figure eights. Is the figure eight is this, conceptually, right? It is the continuation of your cast. It's all it is. It is not different. Our goal, and I say this, and I'm probably Tyler, this is what happens when I haven't had enough Pepsis, to be honest with you, because it's actually way earlier in the day than anybody thinks. Here's the deal. Musky fishing, and I'm going to another tangent here, but follow me. Musky fishing is just like golf. I hate golf, and golf is lame. And if you like golf, I think it's stupid. I'm sorry. But golf, other than their fancy outfits, which are just adorable, wouldn't you agree, Tyler? Adorable golfing outfits. Golf is a game that's similar to musky fishing. You have the drive, and then you have the putting. So it's the long game and the short game. Musky fishing is the same. We have the cast, and we have the figure eight, the long game and the short game. Where everybody is crummy is they're crummy on their short game, whether it be on the golf course or on the boat. That's why people don't catch fish. So thinking about executing that eight is the most important thing. Any goober with a fishing rod can cast a big bait and reel it in. It's nothing, right? You give anybody enough cast with a bucktail, they can catch fish.
Yeah.
This is a game of catching a lot of fish and big fish. So what I was saying is back to the other point of the turning radius. So a fish needs room to turn. If your corners are too tight, they cannot turn. They can't track with the bait. I've seen muskies come in behind a bait. Somebody does a crummy turn or a way too tight turn of this little stir in the pot deal. The fish loses sight of the bait. Not only has he lost visual contact with the bait, he has also probably lost any stimulation hitting his lateral line. And I've seen them almost looking around for where it went. Like one, two, turn, and then they're out of there. Like, what happened? Provide the turning radius. Big, wide turns. You should be figure eighting for a 55-inch muskie every time. You'll catch the 30s because they can turn in it. Don't figure eight for 30s and then expect to catch a 55.
Yeah. love that analogy. That's great.
Well, I mean, it's just true, though.
Yeah. Know? Oh, yeah.
And so the other thing, God, I'm preaching. Sorry if you, if, sorry if I'm annoying you, but it needs to
Preacher
be said.
Steve.
Preacher Steve. Woo. Musky Church. I'm going, like I said, soapboxing. More apologies. But other big figure eight problems. Your line is way too far out. You're not reeled up to the rod tip. And here's my thing. Tell my clients this. If you've been on my boat, you know this. Truck and trailer, right? If I've got a semi truck or a pickup truck, most of you haul boats or have hauled a boat, right?
Mm-hmm.
The closer that load is to the truck that's pulling it, the better it's going to handle, right? If you put a load in the back of a trailer and it's misaligned, right? So we're loading up a box trailer and we're going to put all the weight to the back, right? It's going to handle like crap and it's going to skid out. You always load your trailer towards the tongue, okay? Follow me and see if this makes sense. I use that analogy for handling. So the tighter the bait is to the rod tip, the better it will handle in the eights. So if I've got 24 inches of line out trying to do a figure eight, guess what's going to happen, Tyler? It's going to
Terrible figure eight.
It's going to skid out no matter how fast you are, and you're going to get in the corner, and the bait will be nowhere near where you're at. Think of it, like I said, that's the best analogy I can come up with is a truck and trailer. Get that bait close to the truck. The rod is the truck. The bait's the trailer. Where the rod goes, we want the bait to go. Okay? We don't want it to skid out in corners. We don't want it to have bad handling. That's why I say the trailer analogy of a misloaded trailer. If the weight's in the back, that thing's skidding everywhere and it's not doing what you want it to do. Tight to the rod tip. Get your leader right up to the rod tip. If you're fishing an 18-inch leader, you should only have 8-10 inches of leader out past the rod tip, in my opinion. That's a big thing because I see it. Guys freak out. They see their first muskie. They see their biggest muskie coming in. They stop reeling and they try to go to this eight. Mechanically, you should be right there. And I mean, what happens, Tyler? What do most people fish for muskies? What's the number one bait people throw for muskies?
Bucktails.
Right? What happens on a bucktail in a figure eight with too much line out?
Dude, it stops.
Yep. What do muskies do? They go, huh? Huh? What was it?
They're out of there.
They're
like, that's not real.
Yep. Get that leader up to the rod tip. So wherever your rod goes, the bait will go. When we were talking a few minutes ago about playing with fish, Tyler, which mm-hmm. is, you've seen me do this, is come around, bring them in the first turn, speed it up so they can't grab it, and then do like wild zigzags. And watch these fish zigzag with the bait. You know, you realize if that bait is tight to the rod tip, whether it be a crank, a bucktail, whatever you're figure eighting, whatever you've got on the end of the rod, if it's tight, wherever the rod goes, it's going to do something. So the fish can track the bait better, and it keeps you in a better position. Another thing, man, figure eight stuff here. Gosh, I've just had such a bad run of figure eighters. This is just on. I'm unloading and I'm helping as best as I can.
Soapbox.
Punching in the reel. Okay. I'm notoriously bad about not doing it. Booker does it.
He's really good at it.
He's slick. If he comes in the first turn and you hear his reel go, right?
Yep.
And so his reel is actually in free spool with his thumb on it right there. I'm quick about a fish grabs in the figure eight, about opening my spool or backing the drag really quick. But that's a big thing I see. If you can get good at, I've got bad habits. I got a real bad habit that I can't break after all these years about not engaging that reel, right? If you can get into that, have that reel in free spool with your thumb on it. So when he takes right there in the eight, you're not sitting there dogging him. That's one thing. That's like a pro move. Like I said, if you do it like I do, the second they hit, I open that reel with the thumb on it, right? And it's sort of what two different schools of thought is, if once he hits and he pulls any slack out of the rod, because you got to realize if that leader is at the rod tip, right? The only slack, the only pull he's getting, he's not pulling drag, he's pulling the flex out of the rod.
Mm-hmm.
So he has hooked himself. Once the rod is bent, boom, he's hooked. Now, if he keeps pulling, We have no flex left in the rod. All that energy exerted to binding at the spool and breaking or at your knot. That's why it's a good habit to have yourself set up to open that spool so he can pull against, you know, against the drag, or he can pull against your thumb and get away from the boat if need be, or you can keep him there and play him out instead of, wow, I've got my drag cranked down and I've just hooked this fish in the figure eight and I've got way too much drag and it goes snap and it's gone. That's another thing that is something. Tyler, do you engage or no? Do you open your spool on the figure eights every time?
I'm usually quick enough to get it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the judo level the Booker's at.
Right, just, where's this every time? You hear it every time.
I got that same habit. I'm like, I'm just do it when he eats.
Risk it. But like I said, if you're new or you only been doing it for a couple of years, get in that habit. It's like I said, I spent years, Tyler, with, you know, I fished my round reels. Everybody knows that. And I've moved up to some fancy super reels here as of late, doing some weird stuff. But, you know, I've busted knuckles smacking the free spool on a Boo Garcia reels, just smacking the crap out of it. Right. They hit and I just, bam, you know, hit it, because it locks it down. And sometimes eventually you're going to get a fish that's big on there and you can't free spool it because you can't release the tension on the spool. And that's why it's a better habit. Other figure eight stuff, you know, it's sort of a fly fishing thing. You lift them, you lose them, right? I don't set the hook in the figure eight at all. I don't wrench against the fish. Like I was saying about the rod getting its bend in it. I've seen guys do that and this fish is hitting in the figure eight and I see like a hook set.
You know, and then a bait pops out of its mouth.
Yeah. Right. We got a straightened hook, or worse, he's swimming away with a bait in his mouth, and now you've lost the fish and he's probably dead.
Mm-hmm.
Not good. Don't lift in the figure eight. He grabs it. The rod is going to stretch so fast you're not even going to realize it, right? And it's going to set the hook for you. So let the rod do its work in the figure eight. He's going to set the hook on himself, and you're going to be in good shape there. God, other stuff, since we've already gone long on this, and I'm good. I'm just going to keep going here. When it comes to bending over or crouching, these are other figure eight things. Ben Stone did a video I really liked about topwater fish, right? On pressured waters, about getting down for those figure eights. That's another thing. If you're on gin clear water or you're on heavily pressured water, long before you can see the bait getting there, get down. And you can really make some things happen there. You got to work on like how you're going to do that figure eight and keep it out from the boat and do those things. But that's just another little point there if you're having problems. I would say this. The one thing that's going to stop a fish from hitting in a figure eight are the turns being too tight. The other thing that I'd say is this is speed. Okay. And this is my other big hang up. Let's say we are slow rolling bucktails, right? What are you going to do when a fish comes in? Are you going to turn your figure eight into lightning?
I love this question. I love it.
Right. I'm slow rolling a presentation, but now I see.
And now I'm going to completely change it to something, the speed of light.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. There he is. Only thing we could get to move him was slow presentations. But now that he's beside the boat, he is surely ready to eat this bucktail at 90 miles an hour. No.
We've all seen it. We go, whoa, what? Don't do that.
Yeah. No, that's a paddling. You know, that would be the big mistake I see. If we're doing a slow presentation on the cast, don't do a figure eight that's crazy. Now, one thing, a little pro tip for you. Ramp it up. We'll get them to eat sometimes. So if I'm coming in, I'm slow cranking. I'm not going to get by the boat and go lightning. I'm going to go slow around, always there. Keep it the same speed I had. And I always tell everybody on my boat this. They'll be like, well, how fast do I go? I go, you go the same speed you were going on the cast, right? Guess what? It's never going to happen. The adrenaline kicks in and you're going to go a little bit faster. You just are. right? You're freaking out a little bit in your head.
Mm-hmm.
Try to make yourself go the same speed. You are going faster. You just are. I watch it all the time. The guy was like, yeah, I was going the same speed. I'm like, going, you're like four times faster. Try to keep yourself controlled. Control the speed in the figure eight and keep that bait as close to you, what you had going on out there in the turns. And if he doesn't eat it, ramp him up. Second time around's a little faster, and we're getting faster and faster and faster. That's a trick for these negative to neutral fish or cold front fish where they're moving slow. But once you've got them engaged and you got your intention or their attention, you can sort of ramp them up into striking. But try to focus on, if you're bucktailing and these fish are moving on a medium pace, be real in medium and be figure eighting medium. Your figure eight should be commensurate to what you're doing on the cast. The other thing that's going to come up, and we've answered this a million times, Tyler, and I'm just going to finish the podcast on figure eight soapboxing. Forget it, right?
Yeah.
Gliders.
Ooh, that's a whole nother ballgame. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the glider deal in the figure eight, quote unquote, is a whole different ball of wax. So, Phantoms, Hellhounds, Shums, don't care what it is. If I'm fishing gliders, right, I'm fishing post-frontal, or I'm downsizing, slowing down, I pick up more fish dead sticking than I do trying to figure out a glider by the boat. Period. If I've got a hot fish up on a glide bait, guess what's going on, Tyler? I'm usually fishing the wrong bait.
It's true. They're never on glide baits. They're never like insane. That's so true.
There's certain times I've seen it, but I'm saying in general, I'm sure some guy's going to read an email. I was on Lake of the Woods and they were blowing up hellhounds. Okay, cool. I mean, it happens. But in general, if you are in a glider situation, a classic time to fish gliders, they're not ballistic. If you're like working a glider like bam, 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 pulse, bam, 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 like that fast, put on a crank or a bucktail. Right? You know,
yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. So if I'm working gliders for sort of their design purpose, why am I going to bring you by the boat and even risk it and try to keep a bait going zigzag beside the boat? When I get to about, if I'm fishing my 9.6 and I'm about 9.5, the rod length and a hair more, or 10, maybe it's 11, I'm guessing, a good little distance out from the boat, right where I'm starting to see the bait coming in, I'm going to let it drop. Like, you know, glide, pause, engage the free spool and let that thing flutter down. Right? And then I'm going to click my handle, click, and go pop, pop. That bait's going to fall down and it will pop up. It'll go boom, boom, up. Right? If I knew there was a fish there, I'm going to do that and let it almost go to the bottom or down. You know, if we're over deep water, I might not let it hit the bottom. If I'm in 10 feet of water, I might let out 8-9 feet of line. That fish will grab that bait. If you dead stick it there long enough in front of his face and he's got a little bit of murderous intent in him, they're going to hammer it. Some of the hardest strikes I've ever had in my life. Just like rip the rod out of your hand. You go, whoa, whoa, you know. That fish wasn't moving like that. If that thing's falling, if you jig it like pop, pop up with the rod tip, I'm literally just taking my wrist and popping the line up. They will grab it when it's falling, and it's commensurate to like a jigging hit. Like, you know, when you're jigging a Bondi and that thing's falling and they just hammer down on it. That's the trick, is you're just doing a similar, you know, a pop, pop up and let that thing flutter down. They're going to just smack it. They smack those baits so hard. On the dead stick. Again, if you're fishing gliders just to fish gliders and you want to figure eight them and the fish are moving hot, you know, you can come around the boat and try to zigzag it, but it just is not the same as the dead stick when we're fishing gliders during the appropriate time. Same goes with winter. If you're a guy that's fishing in, you know, pre-ice up, or you're fishing, you know, in the south, you're fishing cold water, why are we trying to bring that fish up shallower than he was to get him to eat up here opposed to drop it down in his face? Why are we doing
that? Common sense.
Why are we doing that?
Why are we trying to change his environment that he already likes to be in?
Right. So it's dead flat, calm, high, bright sun. We're fishing slow and low. Why are we bringing him up to the surface where he doesn't want to be on a bait he hasn't committed to yet? Huh? The logic of it, it just befuddles me sometimes of why are we doing this. Another thing is this. I do the same thing with bulldogs.
Mm.
So if I, you know, I'm ripping along here and I get out there on the cast, rip, and I'll let it fall. Before I bring it into the eight, I always finish everything with an eight, too. If I dead stick and it doesn't hit, I will bring it up and I will do an eight near the boat. But with a bulldog, I'm going to give it a good fall before I get it back up to the eight. Let it fall, jig, jig. Let it fall, jig, jig. You know, if I know there's a fish there, I might do it three or four times. If I don't, I'll give it a one or two, and then I'll come into the figure eight. I've seen it happen both ways with bulldogs, but that's a thing a lot of people aren't doing with bulldogs. They're ripping them, ripping them, ripping them. They're coming into this bucktail style figure eight. And it doesn't, you know, on somebody's bodies of water, it'll work, and the tail's undulating enough, and the bait's moving enough water around. But again, if we're fishing negative to neutral cold front fish or fish that are down deep, why are we trying to pull them up on the bulldog as well?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing.
Tyler, I'm just like, man, can he add more?
I can. Top water. We're going to talk. I'm just going to do the whole figure eight podcast here. With Tyler, we're going to record it. You've heard it at the beginning. We'll record a disclaimer at the front and say, we were going to do a Q&A, but Steve lost his mind. Anyway, actually, I'm looking at the wall here. We're going to do dive and rise. What do I do with a dive and rise beside the boat? Right? You get a big fish up next to the boat with a suic. It does nearly nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's a few ways you can do it. If it's a hot fish, I've actually seen guys pull that bait down and smack their rod on the water back and forth. And fish will come in and hit it. You think I'm crazy, but they will whap that rod back and forth. I've seen that work on eagle, and I've seen it work on Lake of the Woods. Not the most common way to do it, and you got to have a pretty hot fish. But with dive and rise, what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to stick my rod down as far as I can and bop the rod up. So on a dive and rise bait, I'm not going to have it right up to the rod tip. I'm actually going to submerge as much rod as I can with a little bit of line out, right? 12, 20 inches. And try to get that thing to just bop in place as best as I can. And do a big circle bopping that bait up and down to keep his attention. Right? That's a tough one. Like on a dive and rise to get that fish to eat near the boat. I've seen guys that will just stick their rod down and just figure eight the suic. And it does a little bit of wobbling, and the fish will get it. But if it's not a hot fish, if that fish came in low and slow, that's the only trick I got. It works. Not often, but it works. It's rod tip down, line out, and essentially, if you can imagine what I'm doing, is I'm banging that rod tip down, and that bait is diving and rising at the rod tip in a big, big, big oval, big and slow. A lot of times, too, is that's like, say, Tyler, if me and you are on the boat, that's when I'm saying, hey, man, make a cast back right in front of me, right? It's not, yeah. But you can keep them engaged. So dive and rise are a pain, but that's a trick. Your only other option, whether it be, let's say you're fishing a Burt or a Big Daddy or a T-Bone, a litany of these other dive and rise baits, you can just jam that bait down in the water, whipping the water rod around as much as you can to create some motion there, and they'll hone in on it. Those are the toughest, in my opinion. Now, what do we do with tail prop baits, and what do we do with walk the dog baits? Right?
Tail prop baits, I work the same way, figure eight the same way as I would figure eight a bucktail.
Absolutely.
Underwater.
Yep.
I always do it underwater. I've caught some on the surface, but I don't like that. I like it's underwater. It has to be underwater.
Here's my deal. I've been asked this, and God, I'm glad we're talking these, because I've been asked, like, well, I saw so-and-so, he figure eights on top of the water, right? My money is on Joe Booker.
Yeah, mine too.
Any day of the week. I'll take that bet any day of the week. So-and-so figure eights on top of the water. So-and-so said this. I will go back to 1994 or whatever it was, Topwater Terrors and on, is sort of the thought process. If he didn't eat it on the surface, why am I still on the surface? He had opportunity. We need to take it down. right? Figure eight that just like a bucktail. One thing that I see that goes awry on that is people have their body language wrong on topwater. So if I want to move a topwater the right way, I have a high rod angle, right? You know, so we're not digging the nose in. You can sort of, it's not a bucktail rod angle. It's like a mid rod angle. But when that thing's starting to get close, I'm already getting my rod tip down. So it's sort of starting to pull itself under in that last 4 or 5 feet. And so having the rod tip down, that bait's going to go under. The rod tip's already underwater at this point, and now we have this smooth bucktail-like tail prop figure eight situation, right? The prop is going the whole time. It's just like a bucktail now. That's the way I've caught the vast majority of my fish. I've seen people trying to do this, like rod sticking out real far, big wide circles with a surface bait, right? What happens in reality is guys try to do this, and if they don't do it a lot, you see they've got a rod jacked up in the air with their elbows all high up trying to pull the tip across the surface.
You look a little silly.
Yeah. They're like, what? Stop trying to do it. It might work, but I guarantee that fish, if he would have hit it underwater, if he's going to hit, he'll take it underwater more than he would boat side on the surface. My opinion. Again, my money's on Book Daddy on that one. So that's I don't care if it's a fat bastard. I don't care if it's a tallywhacker. I don't care if it's a top raider or water chopper or whatever. That's my money there. And then on Walk the Dogs, another veritable suck fest. Here's my deal. If you get a fish swelling up on, say, a Poe's Giant Jackpot, or was it a Weagle or a Dancing Raider and all this stuff, and he hasn't hit by the time he's making to the boat, what I do is I stop that 6 feet off my rod tip, right? So even if he's hot, I'm just going to pause, completely dead stop. Boom, 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 stop. You will see them stare at it. And they will do one of two things. They will swim away, or they will just bang it. If I have a fish looking at it, and what I'm doing is I'm giving myself operating room, right? And so having 5 or 6 feet of line out and a fish right behind the thing, I'm going to pause the bait. If I'm going to give him a pause, as I'm working the walk the dog. Work, bop, 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 stop. And then I'm going to give it a jerk, right? So 3 second, you know, pop, 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 stop. 2, 3, 2, tick. And just give it a little pop. And then I got a little bit more pop and a little bit more pop right there. So you're giving yourself a little operating space, right? So I'm going to bang that bait and try to keep it in place, right? I don't want it to advance as little as I want it to advance closer to the boat as little as possible, almost bobbing in place. If they don't hit it on the paws, a lot of times they'll come up and grab it when you're just sort of smacking it in place. If they don't do that, pull the thing under and do what you would do with a glider, you know, and bang it back and forth. But that's the trick. Like I said, you get your jackpot, your Dancing Raider, or your Weagle. You know, you bang it in place a couple times, reel it down, bring it up to the rod tip. And you know how, like, Tyler, if you got like a Hellhound or a Phantom there beside the boat, you're sort of banging the rod tip side to side to get it to walk.
Yeah.
You can do the same thing with your Walk the Dog surface baits. You're just pulling him under with the rod tip. But I'll tell you, I've caught a lot of fish. A lot of fish by giving myself that operating room. I would say 60% of them hit on that dead pause, and the other 40 that have hit on that first or second little repop, right? So they're behind the bait and they're looking at it and going, I'm going to hit you. I'm going to hit you. You move. I'm going to hit you. You give it one tick and they just launch at it. That's my walk the dog best guess there. Anyway, goodness, Tyler, did I miss any?
No, I think it's covered. We got it all.
I think that's most of them. You know, you're,
if we miss something, just let us know. Tell us we're idiots. We don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got your, you know, you got your creepers, figure eight them underwater, your globes, figure eight them underwater. You know, if it's a jig and it sinks, dead stick it. But that's the thing, Tyler, I have ranted on for freaking ever. Anyway, well, I apologize. We'll finish the questions next week. I hope you got something out of the figure eight ranting. Tyler, we'll get them next week. What do you say, buddy?
The guru says, hope you enjoyed that rant.
There was a boat that launched on the lake, a fine crest liner, no mistake. The wind picked up, Minn Kota went down, throw me, musky boys, throw.
Soon may the Pennington come to bring us Pepsi and pork and gum. One day when the measuring's done, we'll take our picks and go.
They had not been 2 hours on the bay when her hummingbird, she chirped away. The guide clipped on a Jake to say on the gram that fish he'd show.
Soon may the Pennington come to bring us Pepsi and pork and gum. One day when the measuring's done, we'll take our picks and go.
Before that bait had hit the water, that 50-plus came up and caught her. They tightened down the drag and fought her when she dived down low.
Soon may the Pennington come to bring us Pepsi and pork and gum. One day when the measuring's done, we'll take our picks and go.
No line was broke, no muskie freed. The guide was a hardcore muskie breed, and he was not concerned with speed. He wanted big tip dough.
Soon may the Pennington come to bring us Pepsi and pork and gum. One day when the measuring's done, we'll take our picks and go.
For most of the day and most of the night, the line went slack and then went tight. The net stayed dry till past midnight, that muskie still said no.
Soon may the Pennington come to bring us Pepsi and pork and gum. One day when the measuring's done, we'll take our picks and go.
From what I heard, the fight goes on. That cabbage dragon's still not gone. The pontoon makes a regular call to provision the angler's guide and all.
Soon may the Pennington come to bring us Pepsi and pork and gum. One day when the measuring's done, we'll take our picks and go. Soon may the Pennington come to bring us Pepsi and pork and gum. One day when the measuring's done, we'll take our picks and go.